You tuned to New Sound Radio 92 FM. This is the Community Hour, and I'm Pete Day. Now, if you pick up a copy, I don't know, the Evening Standard, or I don't know, you watch London regional TV news programmes, I don't know, there's been much talk about shifting focus away from the west of the capital towards East London. I don't know, particularly since the Olympics, yeah? Knock-on effects as this has been, of course, massive increase in property prices and rents, forcing many people, local people, who grew up in the area, out of the area. I don't know, and they've got family connections and ties here as well. Coupled with this, of course, have been changes in central government and housing benefits policies. Many people's wages have shrunk in real terms, cuts in local services, and generally people find it harder, I don't know, to make ends meet. Running parallel to this, of course, there seems to be a growing number of people, I mean, small groups, yeah, who are coming together to look at new and maybe different ways of facing these challenges. Looking at these issues, we're joined now live in the studio by Tawanda Yabango, local activist and former resident of the Carpenters Estate in Stratford. Tawanda, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM.
Good afternoon, Pete. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, right, great. Can you just tell us, East London, since the Olympics, better, worse, what's your take on it?
It's been a mixed bag, I should imagine. Well, being a long-term resident of Newham and somebody who sort of spent some time growing up on the Carpenters Estate, which is next to the Olympic Village, I was very excited by the Olympic Games and what it needed.
This is like the run-up to it and things like that.
Yes, this was run-up to it, yeah. And what it promised for East London.
Because you were a bit of a sportsman, I think, weren't you, when you were younger?
Yes, yeah. I was a bit of a sportsman. I rather enjoyed the martial, the arts and that sort of thing.
Okay.
A bit of football. Yes, so I would have been very happy to be an athlete in the Olympic Games.
Just really? Okay, it didn't work out. Okay.
No. I was better at my day job.
Okay. All right, okay. We're not going to be sort of stars down at there. I mean, you can't really complain about the fact you didn't get to compete there, but I don't know, how did it work out from there, though? Did you say you were all excited when it all turned up?
Yes. I think many of us were excited. Oh, the Olympic Games are coming to London, but we didn't quite think about the implications of this, how the Olympic project would affect the lives of local people and what it would mean for us. And so, over the years, I've been sort of looking back and sort of trying to figure out precisely what it's meant for people in the local vicinity, how it's benefited. And how things might not have gone the way we might have wanted or wished them.
Because, of course, at the time, there was a lot of big promises being made, weren't there? And one of them, of course, was from the Olympic Delivery Authority. One that's sort of like really stands out in my mind is one that they said that they would leave behind a legacy of thriving, sustainable communities. I mean, it's a direct quote from this. I mean, and do you think that's happened?
Not quite, because as I understand, they're looking at it from a long-term perspective. For over 30 years, and that's still to be seen whether it has left a sort of a community of thriving communities left behind. But from what my experience of the Carpenters Estate, which was a thriving community before the Olympic Games did turn up, the hope was that Olympic money would reinvigorate these communities by upgrading infrastructure and involving the actual communities themselves in trying to rebuild those communities.
Just to say, I mean, a lot of people maybe be familiar with it, maybe some others wouldn't be. It's that estate right away next to Stratford Station, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
And it's up by the railway line there, and there's a two tower blocks, is it?
Three tower blocks.
Three great big tower blocks. They were built in the 1970s, were they? Early 1970s?
Something like 60s.
Was it late 60s? Okay, late 60s. 70s. And there's also some low rise, some flats around that and things around there. Now, of course, controversially, of course, now a lot of those have been empty for a number of years there. And of course, there was the Focus E15 campaign. They occupied one of these to actually raise the issue of the fact that a lot of them have been empty for so long. I mean, what's going on down there? What's happened? You used to live there. And I mean, what's happened down there?
Well, it's a complicated situation. A lot of the former residents about 2-3 years ago, over the years, have come together to try and save the estate, various groupings. But about 3 years ago, the current residents who live there came together and put together a group called CARP, called Carpenters Against Regeneration Plans, in order to save the estate from being emptied out and being sold off to other developers, namely University College London.
Oh, okay. That was a development, and it all fell through, didn't it? Eventually, they were going to turn it all into a university campus and things like that. And actually, quite a lot of the students were campaigning against it, wasn't they? And things like that. And anyway, that all fell through about a year ago. That all collapsed.
Yes, about two years ago.
Was it 2 years ago? Okay. Yes. Yep.
Yes.
And since then, it's all gone a bit quiet, isn't it? Really.
It has gone quiet. I suppose the the residents and former residents are looking for is for it to be refilled by tenants, social housing tenants, because that is the main function of it. It was a council housing estate.
Yep.
And considering that Newham has some of the highest waiting lists for social housing in the country, any bit of council...
A lot of it's just sitting there empty.
Yes, mothballed.
Yeah, one can't help thinking that there are other plans afoot which haven't been announced yet, you know, for that, which maybe don't involve moving local people in there, don't you? You can't help but think of that, because it's all just suddenly gone quiet and things like that. Okay, I mean, that's in terms of the housing. I mean, because, of course, the other thing that's happened, of course, rents have massively increased in the area, haven't they? Throughout East London, like generally throughout London, East London in particular, but particularly around the Stratford area, isn't it? They've gone absolutely ridiculous, haven't they?
Yes, they've skyrocketed. We've got many, many, many developments that have come about, and many, many new in the pipeline, many coming along in the pipeline. The question, of course, being, is there any of this housing for the local residents? And can they afford any of these properties? Because some of them are billed as having some component of affordable housing. And I question what they precisely mean by affordable housing, because obviously the definition of affordable housing has changed over the years to 80% of market rates.
Okay, yeah, At one time it used to be like social housing, and people, you'd have the idea of like council rents or social housing, there might be housing associations being at a certain level, but they've changed these ones now, haven't they? And affordable, yes, like you say, I think it's 70 or 80% of
80%.
Of the market rent. And when you look at the market rent for somewhere like around Stratford...
Yes, it's unaffordable.
It's not affordable in any like real sense of the term. And of course, a lot of people are just either forced out of the area or just really forced sort of like onto benefits, because they can't possibly get a job that's anywhere you're going to pay for anything like that, aren't they? So
myself and a few others over the years been highlighting that as a problem, simply because if there is to be an Olympic legacy, surely the local residents have to benefit in some way, and that doesn't include sort of pushing them out of the local area in which they live in.
Yeah, because I mean, I think a lot of people just going past, I mean, people didn't really know the area. If they're just sort of like, I don't know, on a bus or a train or driving past Stratford, they might sort of think, oh, blimey, this place has really gone up market, isn't it? This looks really good. It's really good. They've really regenerated the area. It's looking all nice and spick and span. So somebody, until they actually look behind, well, wait a minute, but what does that really mean? Because it does look, you know, they have torn down a lot of the old, they did need some money putting into it. There's no doubt about it.
It did, yes, yes.
You know, it was sort of like a lot of those areas all around Stratford High Street around there. I mean, they were appalling state they're in, but that money's gone in and they built all these bright and shiny glass and steel places. But of course, that's one type of regeneration, but I don't know.
Yes, well, I suppose the thing we would have loved to have had, myself as a former resident carpenter's estate, is a community-led regeneration program. It's not to say that we don't want investment.
Do you feel you're ever consulted on any of this?
Not satisfactorily. Yeah, I think that's the real where we sort of.
Certainly, there was meetings and things like that all that took place, all yes, the way, and things, and you could do these things, and there was a consultation on this, a consultation on that. But I mean, do you think they ever listened to what people said?
Not until we started making noise and saying, "Hold on, we want to be consulted over this," and we and in fact, if you try and sort of shuffle us out of the room, we will keep coming back and banging the door. And that's precisely what we did.
Do you think you've achieved anything? Do you think you've got anything?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
The carpenter's estate is still there. It hasn't been sold off. We're still demanding that Newham Council fills it up with social housing tenants. Secure tenancies is what we're looking for. Because there are lots of people in Newham who would absolutely love to go and live on that estate. Particularly at a time when, as you said, rents are hitting the roof in London, and most people won't be able to afford to live in London, or let alone commute from outside of London, because the costs to travel into London for work
It's getting more and more mad, isn't it, the prices and things like that. Okay, moving on from housing, I mean, looking at employment, the other thing that was sort of said was like, hang on, because of all this, we're going to regenerate the area and create local jobs for local people. What do you reckon?
Yes, this is an area of interest for me, because I'm a union organiser in a small trade union called Industrial Workers of the World. And I have looked at the issue of young people working in the service sector, in particular on things like zero-hour contracts and precarious employment. Over the years, we've seen a lot of jobs being created in and around the Stratford area, particularly with things like the Westfield Stratford shopping centre.
Yeah, I mean, 'cause that's always held up. Whenever you talk to anyone about this and economic regeneration for local people, that's the one that's always talked about. They always say, Westfield Shopping Centre, look at it. There it is, it's employing a lot of local people. And there was a real effort, actually, to try and employ local people as well.
Yes, through the job centre. I do remember this, yes. Yeah. The question, I suppose, we would have to ask is what sort of employment is being created? What sort of jobs are being created? And are these zero-hour contract jobs? And in recent years, maybe
not people aren't too sure what exactly is a zero-hour contract.
A zero-hour contract means your employer has no obligation to offer you work, and you have no obligation to take work. So it's very different from what you normally have in most workplaces. What you used to have in workplaces where you have an employer-employee relationship, where your employee has a obligation to offer you work.
You have a contract, and you said you work 35 or 40 hours a week, and you go in there, and it would be Monday to Friday or Tuesday to Saturday or whatever day, yeah? And you let it stay, all that sort of thing, and that's how many hours you got. As opposed to a zero-hour contract, well, exactly how would that work? You'd be, they'd just phone you up, or how would it work?
They'll say you remain on call. Over the next week, we want to offer you some hours. It's your choice to take it up or not. These aren't necessarily set hours, like, say, 20 or 40 hours a week. It's whatever they feel like offering you.
Okay, so if they're really busy one week, they might sort of say, oh, yeah, you can work 40, 50 hours this week. And, of course, and the following week, if it's really, really quiet, they might say, well, I'm sorry, we can only offer you two or three, or maybe even none.
This is essentially how these contracts work. They've always been there. I mean, when I first started work in Forest Gate 17 years ago at the local McDonald's, mine was a zero-hour contract. However, the nature in which management teams sort of use the contract has changed, because back then it was simply accepted that, all right, you're on 0 hours contract, but we will give you, say, 20 hours a week.
Okay, it was almost like an unspoken agreement.
The nature of that has changed completely. Okay. When we get aggressive use of 0 hour contracts now, where if somebody feels like, I'm not obliged to offer you anything, but in the next week, if I want to offer you 50 hours a week, you have to turn up and take those 50 hours a week.
And of course, I suppose maybe in some ways that reflects the economic reality that, of course, now they turn around and say, well, there's plenty more where you came from.
Yes, and that's part
whereas
of the problem.
Like a few years ago, maybe that wasn't the case.
With the youth unemployment rates, particularly in Newham, being quite high, I'm sure they can have their pick of young workers, but I suppose then we have to ask, is this the ambition? Is this the only ambition we have for our young people, offering them precarious part-time work?
Of course, some people might say, well, okay, these are young people, and like, okay, well, look, of course, you know, it's a bit like young people wouldn't necessarily expect to have, like, particularly good wages and conditions and things like that. But do you see that they could go on and progress later on? Is this part of a career, or how do you see it?
I think this mostly leads to dead-end employment. It's not very much. I think you'd be thinking of things like apprenticeships, which you had many years ago. Obviously, you'd work on a much lower rate, but with the expectation that at the end of it, you'd be in a stable job with a decent salary increments every year.
Right, okay, and this is part of a career rather than just a dead-end job sort of thing.
Yes, a clear career path, whereas what we the most of the jobs that have been created here are really leading to nowhere.
Okay. I mean, if you like, what you're talking about is the problems, yeah? I mean, do you think these are getting worse? Do you think they're, you know, these are going to be ironed out? I mean, I don't know. If you like, you just talked about the problem. What's the solution? Where are we going to go from here? What's going to happen?
I think the solution is very much like what most residents of Newham are starting to do. For example, the folks' mums took action.
Yes, they're the people who were evicted from their hostel, and so they formed themselves a group and they went out there. And actually now, I mean, they started off just being here on New South Radio 92 FM. Now, of course, they go on Channel 4 and things like that, don't they? Yeah. I mean, they've become like a national campaign almost, don't they? Sort of like, yeah.
Yes, yeah, so you take your future into your own hands, and you just don't sit back and expect things to land into your lap. It doesn't work like that. Mm. And the same thing with the Carpenters as estate residents. They took their future into their hands by not allowing themselves to be sort of bought off and sold off cheaply. So I think the same is true of young people in Newham. They should, if possible, I would recommend join a union, demand better wages, increases, and improved training, that sort of thing. Okay. And that's how we should go about it.
Okay. Actually, we've got to go to the break now, yeah? But, you know, if there's one thing that the authorities can do or people listening can do or whatever, one thing that could change that, you know, you think would really leave what you might call a positive legacy from all these Olympics and things like that, something that could pull it all together. If there's one thing, what do you think that would be?
I'd say build more social housing in Newham. Because on the Olympic estates, the Olympic village, people might remember there was the athletes' village, which has been turned into what's called the East Village now. It's a housing estate called East Village. Apparently, half the 2,818 homes have been turned into affordable housing. Why couldn't we have had the lot as social housing?
Right, okay.
Seeing the need in Newham is so great. Yeah. So I'd like to see a lot more schemes for coming up for social housing, as opposed to just simply affordable housing, which, in my opinion,
it's just a term rather than
a term. And serious efforts to try and get young people in Newham into apprenticeships and stable employment that leads to clear career path where they can earn decent wages and things like that.
To Andy Nabanga, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM. You will stay there, won't you? Because after the break, we've got a special report on what's happening down in the city last night. Yeah, you'll stay for that, won't you?
I will.
Stay tuned to New Sound Radio 92 FM.